Welcome back to Following Noah Donnerstorm, my podcast. This week is our Wind and Truth week 14, although we missed last week, so it's 14 and 15. David, how are you?
I'm all right. Tired, as would be expected, but otherwise I'm good.
Glad to hear it. Tim, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Happy to talk about these chapters.
As am I. We have four chapters to cover to make up from last week, which means three Way of Kings excerpts. So let's roll intro and I'll read the from the Way of Kings. All right, we have three excerpts, one from last week and two from this week, and they read as follows. I do not have answers, and there will always be some who denounce me for this decision I made. But let me teach a truth here that is often misunderstood. Sometimes it is not a weakness, but strength to stand up and walk away. Those who offer blanket condemnation are fools. For each situation deserves its own consideration, and rarely can you simply apply a saying, even one of mine, to a situation without serious weighing of the context. As I fear not the child with a weapon he cannot lift, I would never fear the mind of a man who does not think. There's several different things in there, but David, what did you grab first?
Well, that last one about not fearing the mind of a man, it's felt really familiar to me. So I searched my Kindle copies, and Dalinar quotes it in Words of Radiance, chapter 67.
Well, what's the context of his quote?
So he's talking to Navani. About the papers getting released to the public, and they're all laughing about his visions.
Okay.
Yeah. Recordings of his visions. And Navani's like, when I find out who did this, blah blah. Dalinar says, peace, Navani. And how can you say that? Because this is the act of childish men who assume that I can be embarrassed by the truth. But the commentary, the changes, etc., etc. And then he interrupts her as she rants about it. As I fear not a child with a weapon he cannot lift, I will never fear the mind of a man who does not think. Navani frowned at him. It's from the Way of Kings, Dalinar said. I am not a youth nervous at his first feast. Sadius makes a mistake in believing I will respond to this as he would. Unlike a sword, scorn has only the bite you give it. So, It's interesting that Sanderson would choose to essentially reprint that quote in the epigraph.
I'm noticing a child with a weapon he cannot lift in juxtaposition with what we just got in the previous chapter. It sounds kind of ominous to me, but we can talk about more about that later.
Yeah. I think that is the most ominous thing to talk about.
So, yeah. And then also coupled with the excerpt I just read, the first one, sometimes it is not weakness, but strength to stand up and walk away. I think our contest is being nullified. I think Dalinar is going to see a champion he can't face and walk away. And Taravangian knows that.
Definitely. Yeah, there's so many things coming together to point in that direction.
Could that apply in a greater sense to the war in general?
What do you mean?
So, I mean, they have this, like, this whole thing that they've been building up to where, you know, the battles have gotten even more intense, and because of the battle champions is going to freeze everything in place. And I'm just wondering if, like, there's going to be a realization that, like, it's not weakness to, you know, walk away from some of these battles and just let the territory be gained by the other side.
Okay, yeah, I understand. What are our three battle fronts right now? Thalen Field, the Shattered Plains,
and the Azish capital.
Azir.
And then we're considering
diving for Kolinar.
Not Kolinar, right? The Ming wants to invade Herdaz.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
I think they decided against trying to take Kolinar.
Right.
Yeah, they did.
But I'm wondering if it would be smarter to give up one or more of those locations to strengthen.
If we're gonna make predictions, I think they might give up the Shattered Plains, and Sigsil might feel betrayed to go be deployed to a battlefield that they ultimately decide to surrender.
It would make some amount of sense given that it's the Shattered Plains that's going to have all the fused, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you can redeploy your Radiance elsewhere, they're not going to be able to redeploy their fused, so it makes sense.
Or even if they deployed their Windrunners and then later on realized that they're stretched too thin and have to redeploy, and then, you know, his Spren dies or something, that he might have some issues with that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like these quotes are somewhat disconnected. The story really made sense, the parable as he was telling it. But it feels like these last three quotes are like he's giving bullet points that may or may not necessarily be related.
Yeah, it didn't feel like he was telling a story anymore.
Right.
And wasn't it a quote in a previous chapter where he's like, he almost talked down to his own bits of advice. I don't remember the quote. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let me see if I can find it.
Tim was looking for that. I did vaguely remember what you're talking about, David. And even in this one, the middle excerpt, for each situation deserves its own consideration, and rarely you can simply apply a saying, even one of mine, to a situation without serious weighing of the context.
I might just be thinking of this one then.
What I read out of that is Noadon is well known even in his own time. It's not that, you know, he wrote a book and then years later the Knights Radiant picked it up and formed the Knights Radiant around it. No, he's well known even now, even in the fourth parable, because he's saying you can't even apply one of my sayings to everything, which would mean he's well read, or he Noadon is being well read.
Well, if you remember Dalinar's vision, the real vision of Noadon, not the fake one where he's shopping, he's like, you should write a book. And Noadon's like, I can't write a book right now. You know, I have things to do. Right. So writing The Way of Kings was one of his last acts. Right.
Okay.
I feel like it's like him summarizing his life experiences, but surely he would have been talking about refining those things throughout his lifetime. So I think it would make sense that he'd have advice that maybe got boiled down to sayings that happened throughout his lifetime, which then got compiled into The Way of Kings.
Okay, yeah.
All right, I found chapter 21. It's not exactly, but it's pretty close. He says, first, I dare not tell them this dusty traveler whom they shared a meal was in fact the very king that they had heard of. The second was that I did not explain that very king had abdicated his throne and walked away from his kingdom. It's not exactly the same, but a very similar idea of self-deprecating.
Yeah. I think I was literally thinking of the quote that's in this section.
Oh, okay.
That's my tiredness speaking here, but
I just think it's interesting, going back to the whole narrative thing, Nonon seems to now be giving postscript on his own story in these three, as opposed to what Tim just read, which is clearly still part of the story. These seem to be like, I've told you a story, now I'm going to tell you the meaning of the story at the end of it. So I wonder if we're done with the fourth parable, or if it's coming to a close pretty quick here, or coming to the end of whatever day we're in, day two or day three.
Well, what I've always figured is that we're not getting the entire text. We're getting snippets of it. That seems to always be the case in epigraphs. So maybe it's just like someone took a highlighter to the Way of Kings, like, ooh, that's a fun quote. Ooh, that's a fun quote. And then we're only seeing the highlighted sections.
Yes, I agree. But I also make the assumption that we're seeing them in order. But that I guess that could be incorrect.
Yeah. For the story, it would have to be in order.
Right.
But yeah, you're right for the rest of it. It makes sense that it would be sequential.
I still think it's interesting that Sanderson would spend an entire epigraph just giving us a quote we already had word for word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't even make sense in context. Like, I don't understand the context of that quote with the rest of this parable.
Right. It wouldn't have surprised me if this was from a different parable, because you're right, it has nothing to do with the story he's just talking about.
Yeah, it does say it's fourth parable.
But... Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what it's saying is the people who offer blank condemnation, they're fools, and so I'm not afraid of them. But what would he have to fear of them anyway? Oh, they're the ones who were criticizing him for abdicating his throne. Okay. Anyway, do you want to talk about Zeth?
Yeah, we can move on and talk about this. We get a brief flashback chapter. It's maybe 10 minutes on recording. I had read this. Actually, I had Brandon read this to me before at Dragon Steel 2022. So I didn't notice anything super omitted from the original, so I didn't get too much new out of this chapter. What did you guys get?
The only thing new that stuck out to me is just more talk of the color flare stuff.
Okay, yeah. I actually did notice that. You're right.
It's interesting that he added that after releasing the preview chapters. Along with like the major things that were added, right, are the color flare things and the temples of the Honor Blades.
Right.
Which I can see why he would have specifically removed the reference to the temples with the Honor Blades. Or perhaps there was feedback that there should be more foreshadowing of that before Zeth talks about it in with Kaladin. But why the color flare thing? That's been interesting to me from the start, is like, why was that either inserted last minute or why was that omitted from what we got in the previews?
I wonder if he wanted to give more of a culture to the Shin people, or perhaps that was something that came up as he was writing that part of the story. And realized he needed to do some more building up of the culture before going and seeing them.
It definitely, I think I've talked about this in a previous podcast, but it lends to the idea of why Zeth continues to wear white.
Yes.
Right.
So maybe he felt that he wanted to display character growth through what Zeth is wearing.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I like that. Yeah.
So we might see Zeth change outfits by the end of the book.
Zeth the many colored.
Zeth of the many colored trench coat.
One of the things that stuck out to me, I think we've already talked about it, is the stones and the spread of the stones. I think what we came to before was that this is perhaps one of the old or ancient gods from before honor and cultivation showed up.
Yeah.
Up until this book, I always assumed that it had to do with the Shin having to stay in Shinovar. And so, like, if they were directed anywhere with stones you don't walk on, that keeps them in Shinovar, because there's no way to walk around anywhere else in the world.
True.
Zeth even makes that realization at some point. Like, at first, he's like, how can these people just walk on stones brazenly? And then at some point, he admits to himself, well, it wouldn't be possible to go anywhere without walking on stones around here. So I could see a whole religion of reverence to stones coming out of that single directive. But it is possible that there's more to it.
Right. What I've noticed, specifically in this book, I don't know which episode we talked about this in, but the ancient powers or the ancient gods of Roshar being like the wind, the stone, and we had another one, yeah. A third one, the night maybe, I don't remember. But I'm trying to fit together why the Shin would then inherit that religion instead of that being a singer religion, like before honor and cultivation even showed up. Because which chapter that do they does Lyft ask cultivation, or does Lyft ask the sibling about this in the next chapter where they're spread around even before honor and cultivation, and the sibling gives like a cagey answer or something like that. But I'm wondering if people who used to like worship the Spren, such as the Horn Eaters or something, if that even predates honor and cultivation, and if that's a worship the stones, worship the wind and the Spren of those things type thing.
So I'm not surprised that the original singer religion would have been lost.
Sure. Sure.
All we have is the Lyssidur oral traditions, that Venli and Eshonai's mother would sing to them. And I think it was Eshonai, or was it Eshonai or Venli, who was supposed to learn the songs?
It was Venli, and she didn't like the job.
Yeah. And so that's all that's left of even, the pre-odium religion that they would have had,
right?
Much less pre-honor cultivation religion.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
It's been, what, 10,000 years or something? Maybe 5,000? I don't know. Some number something of like thousands that. Of years. So one is to assume that it was pre-shattering would be when that religion would be around. But basically, I think you're right. I think we learned that the singers were on Roshar pre-shattering.
Right. I wonder
So Roshar is akin to Yolin.
Yeah. I wonder if these are ethers we're talking about, actually. If there's an ether of the stone or an ether of the wind or something like that, and those are hanging out before the shards come.
It's quite possible. I assumed it was Edonalcium, putting Spren on the world, but
yeah, I assume so as well. But I could really see it being Aethers. We've got the Midnight Mother, who we're pretty sure is an Aether or has something like that.
Yeah.
I'm still not convinced that the Midnight Mother is an ether or is related to ethers, and more that, the ethers and the magic of the shards tap into the same fundamental rules of the universe.
I could see that.
I could see it either way. Anything else on the Zeth flashback chapter?
I like your note here, Tim. I don't know if you want to talk about it, but the family placing the burden on Zeth.
Yeah, that was something that really stuck out to me. Often when you're reading fantasy as a young adult, you're It's like the kid makes all the decisions and the adults assist them. And that's fine. And I've loved that. But as I'm returning a little bit, realizing, okay, you know, the adults have a responsibility to be making decisions, and like they're the ultimate responsibility. But in this instance, his family is very much offloading responsibility to him. They know what they want to do. And it's almost like they're getting permission from the one who might tattle on them.
That's how I read it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting power dynamic.
And I think it was manipulation.
Mm.
Parental pressure, peer pressure, and manipulation, because they know their son. They know that Zeth is seemingly much more adherent to their religion than the average person might be, especially the rest of his family. And so they're like, we need to make sure Zeth doesn't report that we moved the stone if we're going to do that. So they manipulated him into being his decision to do it, which limits the chances that he would, like you said, sort of tattle on them.
Yeah.
And cause them problems.
And it's got huge impacts on people, those types of family dysfunction. You know, every family has various degrees of that, but they have very large impacts. So it makes sense that this similar idea of Zeth wanting to just offload responsibility is very strong in his personality right now and fighting with that idea.
You know, what else is interesting is Zeth really respects his father, even in, you know, current day, to the point that he doesn't want to use his father's name because he feels like his actions soil his father's name. Interestingly, he is willing to take his grandfather's name, but that's a different thing.
But I have noticed that. What did his grandpa do that he's willing to take his name?
But either way, what's interesting is I wonder if a part of Zeth's character growth will be realizing that his father wasn't as great as he thinks he was.
Right. I'm curious if this directly ties to him becoming truthless, because now, because you're right, they manipulated him into thinking that it's his decision to move the rock or not, even though it's his mom who ends up moving the rock. So now I'm wondering if the guilt, whatever, just plagues Zeth for a couple flashback chapters, and then he finally goes and tells, and then they name him truthless because it was his decision. You know, they're all about their rules and stuff. So it'd be very interesting if he was manipulated into becoming truthless by his family, and that might explain why he doesn't want to talk about his family to Kaladin as he's retelling the story.
How do you reconcile that with the fact that he was named truthless for saying the Radiants are returning?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm curious. I don't know if him claiming the Radiants are returning are going to tie to this, or if this is just an intro of giving the relationship between Zeth and his family. But I'm curious to know if this directly ties to that claim or not. I don't know how that would, but
yeah, honestly, I don't know how he found out that the Radiants are returning.
Right. I assume we'll read that.
The most heartbreaking thing would be if his sister turns out to be a budding Radiant and is like killed by Nail.
Oh, yeah.
Or if the Unmade shows up and like reveals someone to be a Radiant or something and Zeth sees it.
Mm-hmm. Or perhaps he recognizes this is an Unmade, this is evil, and people don't want to recognize that.
Like it's already there.
And yeah,
they don't see it for an Unmade. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or they just—it's easier to ignore it.
I don't know how this would work timeline-wise, but could he have? No, it really doesn't work timeline-wise. I was thinking about the heralds. Like either Talon's return or you know, Shannarach being sent back to Braze, and related to the fact that the closest temple to him is the Stoneward Temple. But the timing just doesn't work, because Shannarach was sent back, or at least according to the prevailing theory, on the night he killed Gavilar. And then after right. that is when Talon returned. So I guess that doesn't really work. But like, it would be really interesting, like, if he saw Talon's blade reappear in the stone temple or something.
Yeah, but
it just doesn't work.
Like you said, yeah, the time, he's already there.
I like the idea. I think it's neat, but yeah. It doesn't work for many reasons, including the mechanics of the Honor Blades returning, although we don't really know the mechanics of Herald's returning.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible it takes a while for the Heralds to resurrect?
Maybe
they resurrect at the temples. But I mean, he kind of just appeared in Kolinar, but
yeah,
I don't know. I'd really be interested in like getting the POV of a Herald returning back to Roshar.
Yeah, that would be really interesting.
Our bingo boards that come out later this next week, somebody drafted, somebody gets a Tanavast point of view, or we get a Tanavast point of view chapter. And I was like, I don't think that's happening. That'd be cool, but I don't think that's happening.
We've had one before.
A Tanavast point of view chapter?
Oh, not Tanavast. Sorry, I thought you said Talonel.
No.
Tanavast, no. I don't think so. Maybe Stormfather. Which could be Tanavast Light.
True. Diet Tanavast.
Yeah.
All right. Zeth and Kaladin current day. There wasn't too much from this chapter besides Zeth is actively telling Kaladin this story that we're reading.
Yeah.
But then they see where the Unmade is kind of hanging out. Kaladin seems pretty chill about it. I thought this would be, you know, big news or something, that, oh, there's an Unmade over there. All right, let's go camp. Okay, hold on. Like, I thought that was a bigger deal.
It felt very D&D to me.
Oh, yeah.
Got to rest before you go take the encounter.
Yeah. Oh, that looks like a boss battle over there. Can we rest overnight over there, away from it, so that we're rested for this battle?
What are we going to learn before we go battle it? Yeah. We're going to go sit by the fire and get the next Zeth flashback chapter, presumably. So what's in that one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I still don't think we've covered all the previews, F chapter.
Yeah, I remember getting one more, I think.
Yeah.
I
won't say what's in it, though.
I don't remember what's in it.
I do, but I won't say, because I think that will...
Anything else in the Zeth and Kaladin present day? I didn't get much. Besides, Syl once again showing up in human form.
Yeah, there are so many things that seem very heavy-handed, which I think might be on purpose, because it's book 5 and things are wrapping up, so he's just starting to like really just like, this is what's going to happen, guys.
Yeah, I did like the nod to the stew. He's going to make some stew to get Zeth to talk.
Yeah.
Has Kaladin ever made the stew himself?
Not that I know of, so who knows, it might have the opposite effect.
It might not be very good. I mean, he can't be a good surgeon, a good soldier, and a good cook, right?
Surely not. Maybe it's so bad that he gets Zeth to make it, and then Zeth opens up while Zeth's making it.
Maybe. Yeah.
Here's a traditional... maybe he makes some like more human-like food.
Yeah. All right. Moving into our Shallan point of views through 28 and 29, I believe, we get our confrontation with the Ghostbloods that was teased a couple weeks ago. I'll summarize it real quick. Shallan reveals herself, jumps back into the artifact room, gets the dialogue back and forth between Marais, Shallan, and Yatil. And then Yatil shoots Shallan. She deliberately dismisses everything. Gets shot with anti-stormlight. It doesn't do anything because she's not infused. And then they escape, run away. Wasn't clear to me if we apprehended anybody in the Ghost Bloods? Did we get like everybody else in the room except for Yautil and Moraes?
We, as they fled in the tunnels, apparently they were just getting captured by the Radiance.
Okay. Yeah.
So we learned that at the end of the most recent chapter, I think.
Right. So we get everybody except for Yautil, Moraes, and whoever that third.
Yeah, just those three were not captured, which is interesting.
They jump into Shadesmar and go rowing towards Yur'Athiru, which is not close. Right? I didn't miss something. That's not.
Oh, you're
that's
right.
Not anywhere. That's not close. I originally pictured it as, oh, they're rowing back over to the Oath Gate. No, no, no. She said they're rowing to Yur'Athiru, which is like a while. Like that's across the continent. But anyway, jump into Shadesmar, and then we get a little bit of Shallan deconstruction for the chapter. Yeah, that's about it. What'd you guys get?
One thing that was interesting to me is she was able to hold anti-stormlight. It felt wrong, and it did not heal her.
True. Oh, yeah. It did not heal her.
So it does not behave the same as Stormlight, at least within a Radiant.
And with that, I want to know, how was she infused with it? Because it's not like if you stick a gemstone inside of a person, they're going to take it in. Is it a specific fabrial that's set up that way? That didn't seem well explained to me.
I mean, it could be Raysium.
Is that what they use for the Heavenly Ones spears?
Yeah, so the fused weaponry is made out of it, as well as it's what Navani and Raboniel used to transfer, like the anti-light dagger that Raboniel made to kill her daughter was Raysium, because it forced the light into her. Because Raysium is basically a conductor that moves investiture from one end to the other.
Right.
Which is why it's able to suck the investiture out of a Radiant or put anti-investiture into one. But yeah, it was a gemstone though, so
I need
maybe
to
it's different.
I need to read Rhythm of War before 2 weeks from now.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, like can she use the anti-stormlight is a big question in my mind. Like, if so, it feels like with the use of creative use of stormlight plus anti-stormlight, it seems like Lightweavers might be the most powerful order. They could essentially make nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Like you create a stormlight illusion and an anti-stormlight illusion, and you have them run at each other. Like
that's terrifying.
Yeah,
this whole time we've been worried about what shattered the planes and what has that power. No, we should be wondering what can shatter Roshar and what has that power.
we know something destroyed Ashen.
True.
Were they playing around with anti-light on Ashen?
Feasibly.
Is this brand new? Like, are we really to believe that none of the scholars in the past thousands of years thought of making anti-investiture before? Because I'm pretty sure the Dark Sphere came from Vasher, right?
From who?
Vasher. From
Vasher. I've heard that before.
That was in the prologue.
Yeah.
What?
Vasher invented anti-light, and then Navani recreated it from the sphere, the Dark Sphere.
Yeah.
I have vague memories of this. I don't remember it being that earth-shattering to me. I guess it should have been, though.
Yeah. Vasher was a secret scholar that Gavilar had.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and he names him Vasher. He doesn't even say... That's right, he uses the name Vasher.
Yeah, he says Vasher.
I totally forgot about that.
And what the assumption, if you connect the dots, is that Vasher provided the anti-light.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it explains a lot about, like, you know, where did Gavilar get... I keep wanting to say Gavador. Where did Gavilar get the anti-light sphere from? Because Navani only knew to even try it because she had an example of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, doesn't Gavilar think he got it off of Braze?
he got void light from Braze, but then they constructed anti-void light.
Okay.
Vasher did.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, Vasher being the scholar that he is, it's not, it suddenly makes sense how that could have happened. But it means that anti-light is not necessarily a new thing and perhaps was used on Ashen.
I think if it was not a new thing, a lot more fused would be just gone. And it wouldn't be such a big deal that fused and spread can die.
Maybe. It could be one of those, like, we don't want to introduce anti-light because it can kill the heralds.
It could be.
The heralds would certainly suppress it. Because that's the only thing that can kill them, presumably. Yeah.
Well, apparently raising them into a gemstone does it too.
But... yeah.
Is that new? Like, it seems like the fused knew that they could do it. It's all very confusing.
That's related to them capturing Bod or Mishram. So because they captured her, then they realized they could capture. So they thought they could capture the heralds as well.
Right.
And then,
so was Bod or Mishram captured using a Razium dagger?
Probably not literally, but even if it was just like the idea of, oh, Spren can be captured. The heralds are like Spren. How do we do this?
Yeah. It just feels like there's so much new tech in this desolation compared to previous ones.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it was Odium specifically not like suppressing that knowledge. Like, because he wanted the desolations to continue until the final one. Because these are all cycle breaking tech.
Right.
You can permanently kill the heralds. You can permanently kill the fused. Like, that breaks the cycle.
Yeah, it's true.
And Odium wanted to continue the desolations because he was trapped on Roshar. I don't know. I'm trying to connect the dots here in real time, and it's half working. But
some of it works.
Who gives Dalinar the advice for the contest in Oathbringer?
Tanavest, it does at the end of Way of Kings.
You're right, he does. And then the first time Dalinar meets Odium, he immediately challenges him to a contest, even though they don't actually... Yeah. He doesn't accept it right then.
I want a contest. And Odium's like, nah.
Yeah, it's one of the first things he says. And Odium's like, you have no idea what you're talking about, dude. Just shut up.
Yeah.
But... okay, so Tanavast is the one that thinks the champion or the contest is the way out, but
yeah,
presumably there's other ways out of this whole cycle.
Yeah,
and as much as shards expand your mind, they don't really provide you access to things that the shard itself hasn't done before, right? So. New tech not, and the shard not knowing about new tech, it makes sense to me.
I'm a little wishy-washy on it, but I'm not upset about it.
Yeah. I did like, I'm kind of changing topics a little bit, the plate amplified her voice. And so there's a lot more that it can do than just be like really strong armor. Curious to see what else comes up with that.
I was wondering if that was a Lightweaver thing or if that was a plate thing, because I feel like plate has done that in the past, even dead plate, to like for Dalinar and Adolin, they can, you know, shout across the arena or whatever, shout across the plains in their plate. But we've also seen Shallan manipulate sound before, so I was wondering if that was a Lightweaver thing.
I have the same memory of even Deadplate amplifying voice.
Yeah.
Like, it has certain abilities still, like making the visor transparent to the user.
Yeah.
I think amplifying voice was another one.
Could be. It could be. I remember specifically this time she realized her voice was amplified and she said thank you to her Spren and they responded.
Yeah.
And with that, did you think there was anything special with how Yatol was able to track the real Shallan versus the fakes? Or was it just, you know, she's a special assassin and she's got good instincts? Maybe the Radiant she bonded.
We see this with Yasna, where she can look into the cognitive realm.
Mm.
So it could be that.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if it was Radiant powers that let them transfer into Shadesmar, which I'm not convinced that it is, but
I think that they're will shapers, but
isn't that the power to just go into Shadesmar? Isn't that something that's on a higher bond of Spren? Or, well, no, Shallan goes in.
Well, right, Shallan's special. Don't talk about
Shallan. Yeah, okay, so Shallan specifically says she's special and says, yeah, I shouldn't even be able to do this. But then that made me think, okay, well, hold on. We've always made the assumption that both Elskullers and Lightweavers can jump into Shadesmar because of their powers. But no, it was explicitly told to us here, well, Shallan shouldn't be able to do that, but she can. And now I'm like, so, okay, well.
She has the ability to soulcast, which requires being able to peek into Shadesmar,
right,
but not fully enter. But okay, because she has two, like, it's kind of like a Vin with her seeker abilities, because she has the earring, where like she can do seeker things that shouldn't be able to be seekery done. Okay. Pierce copper clouds. I'm thinking it's like you can peek into Shadesmar and then peek into Shadesmar again, and now you're in Shadesmar, right?
Right.
Like a double peek. So she just has a much more powerful Lightweaver ability set than someone with just one bond. But you have to be able to peek into Shadesmar in order to perform soul casting. But will shapers have the transportation surge, which is the ability to go into Shadesmar.
Will shapers and Elskullers?
Yeah, Elskullers and will shapers. So I'm assuming they're an Elskuller or will shaper. My money is on will shaper, just because Reachers don't want to bond humans anymore. And yes, they're human, but these are corrupted will shaper Spren, corrupted Reachers.
Yeah,
is my assumption.
Hmm.
So we don't know exactly what they can do because it's a kind of a corrupted ability set. But it would give them transportation and cohesion.
Mm-hmm. Do we know when the first time Shallan, or do we know the first time that Shallan peeked into the cognitive realm? Because there's a line here where she's doing her remembering something that she's forcibly forgotten about the first time that she went into Shadesmar, and that it wasn't with Pattern, it was before.
Yeah, so I think we're just being reminded that she used her powers quite extensively as a child.
Okay.
Yeah, to answer your question, no, we don't know what she's referring to. The first time we saw it was in Karbranth.
She does it when she turns the goblet into blood, right?
Right.
Yes.
And somebody drags her down into the beads.
Testament, maybe?
That's been the recurring theory for a while. It was Testament, but
yeah.
Anything else on the Shallan chapter?
Oh yeah. I did have one last thing. Curious what you guys think. Is it sarcasm or is it just Spren having different perspectives? Pattern comes up and says, I'm very glad you did not get killed while I was not here. I should like to be there when you die. It is a thing friends do for friends. Thought it was funny, but also I could see it as like the Radiant long-term perspective. Radiant Spren, they're gonna see humans die a lot because
When a Radiant Spren bonds a human, the expectation is the Spren continues to live while the human dies at some point.
Yeah.
So that, you know, they know what they're getting into. They're like, I'm bonding this human, and it's a temporary thing. even if they die of old age, they're still going to die before the Spren does. Because the Spren, at least up until now, don't die.
Mm-hmm.
Up until Antilite. And I wonder if that's going to get turned around on him, and like Shallan will be there when he dies.
Oh, my heart.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I won't really care if Pattern dies. I might care more if Testament dies.
Really?
You don't like Pattern?
It's not that it's not that I don't like Pattern. It's that he is very low on the scorecard for Spren. I will get emotional if they die. And if we're going to have a Spren death, my vote is to vote Pattern off the island. But yeah, we don't need to get into my feelings about Pattern.
I did want to briefly touch on Shallan's leather armor, because she changed into the outfit that the Ghostblood was wearing.
Mm-hmm.
And my assumption is that this is higher technology leather armor, like higher technology than what Roshar has, or perhaps, you know, they have access to cows.
I was gonna say, I thought this was like a lion skin or something like that. Something
that lion skin would not be good armor.
Something that we see on Scadrial that isn't on Roshar.
I don't know. I'm not convinced that these ghost bloods are Scadrian. Because we know that Yattle was not born on Scadrial through word of Brandon.
Right.
So it would be whatever world makes the best armor right now is what they'd be wearing, is my assumption. But
oh, fair enough.
Assuming they could get it. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
But it could just be cow's leather.
Yeah, it's interesting because you think
Roshar would be good at making armor, but not leather, not light armor, right? They're good at making heavy armor out of metal.
Right.
But they're not very good at making mobile light armor, because what are they going to make it out of?
Yeah, a lack of materials, definitely.
Until they get material science, you know, in the modern age.
Mm-hmm.
Kevlar.
Yeah.
Could it be Kevlar?
I doubt it, but Kevlar has much of an impact on those types of things. Sharp points, it's more like bullets.
Fair enough. I don't know enough about Kevlar to say, but
yeah,
I just googled it. What is Kevlar made out of? It's a chemical compound. They need advanced chemistry.
Yeah, okay. You need material science, you need like modern material science, which eventually the Cosmere will have, but I'm not sure that they would. But I mean, I'm thinking about like Scadrial tech level right now is like right before Wax and Wayne series, like a couple decades before Wax and Wayne series.
Yeah, it's true. So they probably wouldn't have. Yeah, I'm on board now. That's probably not from Scadrial.
Okay. I wonder if Navani will want to get her hands on that armor.
Hey, Navani, this stopped an arrow for me. You want to look at it? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like it should have gone straight through her, which is horrifying.
It's pretty scary.
Yeah.
Okay. Finally, this Lift Gavinor chapter. I'm excited about this. Okay. Our first S word in the Cosmere. Congratulations, Lift. I know people on Reddit were pulling for that for a long time. But these Gavinor dialogue lines, it's not that I'm celebrating on Gavinor's trauma. I'm certainly not. However, these are really good. These made me emotional, which I would say is a good thing. And they finally, hopefully, this chapter finally shuts up the Moash apologists in the circles, because there's some like real tangible trauma that Gavinor is going to have to deal with, maybe in this book, maybe, you know, way down the line, or maybe he dies before that. I don't know. But the real tangible damage that Moash has done to plenty of people, but also to this kid specifically, is on full display here. And I think that is a good thing for this book to show that type of scar that Moash's actions have caused. I thought this was a good chapter.
I definitely agree. But of course, I my mind had to go to this is more evidence and building up to Gavador becoming the champion for Odium.
That
because he it is so easy to manipulate him
right.
when his goal is revenge against Vire. Because first of all, Odium doesn't care about Vire anymore, probably. Vire's been used up. And so he could easily, and it's not that Gavinor wants revenge against the singers. He wants revenge against Vire.
Yeah.
And so Odium could come, or Odium's forces could come and manipulate him and say, we will train you with the sword and we will provide you with Vire. Right.
Mm. Ooh.
And in exchange, you will be our champion. And that would sound really good to a young Gavinor, right?
Mm-hmm. Man,
he gets to play swords with his
yeah. All you got to do is go play swords with Dalinar, and then you get to kill Vire. Man,
yeah.
There's a conspicuous lack of playing swords with Dalinar. I noticed in this chapter. I thought we were gonna get it. I thought he asks Dalinar before he goes down the lift, who presumably is about to jump into the spiritual realm, which seems like a big deal. But he asked him, can we play swords now? And it's still a no. So now I'm like, okay, all right. Yeah. Thanks, Sanderson. Appreciate that.
But we learned why he wants to play swords with Dalinar, because one could assume that it was he's a kid who wants to play games, right? He wants to be entertained. But no, he wants to train so that he can kill Vire.
Right.
Yeah. And so he wants to train in swords from Dalinar, who is he would respect as a swordsman. So he's not getting that from Dalinar, so he's gonna find it elsewhere.
Definitely. I've been holding out hope that this wouldn't be the case, but he keeps on laying bricks down on this road leading towards exactly what you're saying.
Before the podcast, Tim and I were discussing about whether we would notice this kind of thing if we were just blazing through the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know I might catch it, but it's the kind of thing that's subtle enough for when I read through it really quickly that I would realize it once it happened, be like, oh no, I should have seen this coming, but I might not actually have seen it.
If I was reading the entire Stormlight archive through for like the first time, I doubt I would see it. But because I'm on the lookout for Gavinor with all the, dialogue that's happened over the last several years, I think I would have seen this if I was going fast. But if I was going blind without hearing a bunch of other people discuss it, then I don't think I would have seen it.
Yeah, I think a lot of this stuff feels very heavy-handed to us because we've had years to just circle and discuss every tidbit in the books. But if we think about the casual reader who maybe started reading Stormlight this year so that they would be able to just continue through to Wind and Truth, and they're not paying a whole lot of attention to fan theories in the community, I think that they might not have caught it at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, there are some readers who are just amazing at picking this stuff up as they go, but I think the average reader is going to have no clue at this point. And so we kind of have to take the whole series as a whole, as a finished product, and say, if you're just reading this through, is it really that heavy-handed, considering how close we are to the end?
Anything else on the Lift Gavinor stuff?
I really like how Lyft is looking out for Gavinor in general.
Yeah.
She always knows exactly who to pick to, interact with and help.
What ideal is Lyft on? Do we know that?
third, you know, since Oathbringer, third.
Yeah.
Right. And they picked some other lady for the leader of the Edge Dancers.
Yeah, you even though Lyft doing that.
Well, I don't even think Lyft wanted to do it. She's just being spiteful because she can.
Yeah. Is she even a real Edge Dancer is another question.
But... That's a great question.
I want to know if her armor, it will be made out of Hunger Spren.
Because she keeps attracting it everywhere.
she attracts Hunger Spren more than any other Spren. I'm assuming Edge Dancers in general wouldn't use Hunger Spren, but Lyft is special, and I would just love her armor to be made of.
I think it was Paul who brought this up after reading Tress, that Lyft actually has a Luhel bond with Windel instead of a Nahel bond.
Interesting.
Because she needs to keep eating to feed her powers.
Huh. I never thought about that. It's possible, but I'm not convinced, but I wouldn't be surprised if that ended up being the case.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. I don't really know what a Luhel bond is, but now's probably not the time to get into it.
How many times have you read Tress?
Once.
Yeah, go read Tress and then you'll remember.
All right.
It has to do with the Midnight Essence spores they feed off of her water.
Yeah, okay. I remember now.
That is really reminiscent of Lyft, now that I think about it. Just in general, like the captain and how she had to keep drinking water.
Yeah. All right. This Renar and Relaine point of views.
Yeah.
We get some very obvious foreshadowing visions for the first time in a while. And I don't know what any of them mean. So do you guys want to go through these and try to figure out what they are?
Yeah, let's go through them one by one.
All right, let's do it. So the first one, let me go find it. Do you, either of you have a summary of what this first one is?
So
I'm scrolling through it right now.
The first one, it's just Renarin on a throne in some different weird clothing. It might be singer clothing, but he's in his own bedroom in Kolinar, not in the throne room.
Is he wearing a crown?
Oh, good question.
My brain has a crown on him, but I don't know if that's correct.
No, it does not mention a crown.
Okay. Because this is the one where they stop and talk about it for like several paragraphs and then move on. The other ones are more brief.
Yeah, he's saying he's on a throne. He's in some kind of archaic outfit. But it's his room, not a throne room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then they talk about models.
Oh yeah, his little action figures.
Yes.
And his books. So they're more interested in Renarin explaining what a model is and what books he reads rather than look at like what is this depicting.
Mm-hmm.
Did I make this up in my head, or did they explicitly say that one of these is true and the rest of these are false?
They do say that, but I don't think they understand it well enough to know for sure that one of these is definitely true.
Yeah, I read that too, and I dismissed it immediately. Like, there's no way that's actually how it works.
Yeah.
Because you can't know that those are the only possibilities.
Right. So, yeah, I heard that, and I was like, what? What?
But yeah, Renard was actually thinking about, I don't know if it was it earlier before this vision, he was thinking about how he rejected the offer to, you know, be heir to Urithiru or to be heir to Yasna.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this is him on a throne. This is if he accepted that.
Okay.
But I think it's a little abstract that he's in his room instead of like in a throne room.
So. Yeah. I could see that. I think it's more like, what if he joined Odium? You know, he's got a quote corrupted Spren. This is the if Renarin were to join with Odium.
Interesting.
He could go be king of Kolinar over the singers.
Yeah.
Yeah, and paint his minis all day long.
Heck yeah.
Paint his minis and read his what kind of books were they again?
Yeah, adventure stories.
Yeah, they were like, they were fantasy books.
Yeah.
he was reading Stormlight Archive.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Maybe Renarin writes the Stormlight Archive.
Perhaps.
That would be cool.
All right, should we move on to the next one?
Yeah.
Yes. Then do you have it?
Oh, it was Gliss who talked about when Honor and Cultivation came to Roshar.
Mm-hmm.
Relaine, you were already here, your people. So it wasn't the sibling, it was Gliss.
Okay. Yeah.
Gliss be a Spren from before? Like we were talking about before the Recreants. We're talking about how we hadn't met Spren from before the Recreants. And so that none of them remember what the Recreants was, but maybe Gliss does.
I would be surprised. Like
older than Syl.
I would be surprised if that was the case, but it would be really interesting.
Because Syl can't be the only Spren of all the Radiant Spren, not just Honor Spren, who happened to not be bound to a human when the Recreants happened.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that.
And they could be jaded about what happened and more accepting of being touched by Jean-Not.
Yeah.
So maybe Gliss is the key to the history of Roshar.
I have so many conflicting feelings on Gliss and what's Relaine's Spren name? Because Relaine's Spren is also corrupted, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't remember really.
I don't know if we know Relaine Spren's name yet.
They named them in this.
Oh, do they?
In this chapter. I'm 89% sure.
Does Relaine Spren even talk? I didn't notice.
Anyway. What is the second?
Tumi.
Tumi. Yeah, that's right.
Tumi. Okay.
Yeah.
What is the second vision? I can't find it in this chapter.
It's a dark and building storm. They assume it's the Everstorm.
But we're told another storm is coming, right? In one of the early epigraphs. Not epigraphs. She says it to, the wind says it to Kaladin.
Oh, yeah, the wind.
Where is this? I'm also trying to find it. Storm.
No, I passed it. This is the Mishrim stuff.
There we go. If you search storm, it's one of the last mentions of storm.
Relaine makes the assumption it's the Everstorm.
Mm-hmm. But it's dark and building, and these don't show the past.
Right.
Why would there be a window depicting the storm? It had already arrived.
Oh, yeah. I just read that too.
So yeah. I think they're just like not even considering the idea of a third storm, right?
Yeah.
They already have two highly destructive storms.
I mean, they've got two more cardinal directions. Sometimes the windows
just like this, nothing relevant. It's like, okay, well, you just don't understand it. It's not that it's irrelevant.
Yeah, I'm same as him. I just filed it into the category of, I might know what this means someday.
The next vision is Dalinar's final vision.
Yes.
Which is also in the past. Unless Dalinar revisits the visions a lot, so.
Yeah.
Though that vision, it was a possible future. So perhaps that's the twisting way of this kind of a thing could happen.
I mean, it's very clear, especially from what happens at the end, that they're accessing the spiritual realm when they do this.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next vision is them seeing Shinovar. Mm-hmm. And he counts 12 distant figures. They're all human. This one might be Horn Reader. This one might be Makibaki. And this one, what are those humans with blue skin? I couldn't help but think Syl.
Yeah. I guess I hadn't like, even considered Syl, but I definitely should have.
Yeah. But there are other humans with. Well, Renard says those are the Nautans, unless you're talking about the Amians who aren't human.
Yeah. But
neither are quite as blue as the woman in this picture. And I think that's Syl.
Hmm.
True.
A distant woman in a vivid blue skirt with white hair and blue skin.
Yeah, that's got to be Syl.
Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't think so.
So is this more evidence that Syl is going to become physical? Or is it just Syl, right, as is right now?
Yeah, I assume this is... I could see it either way. But this would be Zeth, Kaladin, Syl, and our 9 remaining heralds? Maybe?
12 figures. So Zeth, Kaladin, Syl.
But the heralds, I mean, do we know? We know what they look like, and there aren't a bunch of blue-skinned heralds. Horn Eater,
yeah, there aren't Nautan heralds. Yeah.
I mean, the only reason why they say Nautan is because they see Syl.
No, because they see multiple humans with blue skin, but then one of them stands out as being bluer.
Yeah.
The Syl stands out as being bluer.
Okay.
That's how I read it anyway.
Yeah, I think that this could be like the crew that we're going to see go and cleanse Shinnabar. The Motley crew that gets together and saves the day.
Where is this Horn Eater and Makibaki? Like Makibaki is generally how Rosharan's perceive Nail.
Yeah, that's true.
But I don't know that there'd be a Horn Eater herald.
Oh, they Chinarach with the red hair.
They only see one human that's blue.
No, it just says
that this one might be Horn Eater, this one might be Makibaki, and this one, what are those humans with the blue skin? They're trying to remember who has blue skin.
I was reading it wrong.
Okay, you're right.
He's listing off one at a time, and he's like, wait, what do we call the blue skin ones?
Correct.
But it's just Syl. He's seeing Syl.
Okay. Yeah, I think we're seeing Kaladin, Zeth, Syl, and our 9 heralds.
And remember, this is R'lane trying to identify human races.
Right.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be very good at it. Like, he's barely met any of them.
Yeah,
just what he's been around in the tower. So
that's interesting.
He could be listing off the heralds and just like not knowing what Horn Eaters really look like. Renarin not correcting him. Because it's Renarin.
Right. I think when our heralds vanish, according to the wind, that they're gonna show up in Shinnevar either before that or as that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're seeing.
So the optimistic thing to say is Kaladin manages to heal the Herald madness and they all gather in Shinnevar.
Right. That's the best case scenario.
Now, this isn't necessarily going to happen, but this is a potential future. So.
But he does say that he felt peace. So
it does seem to be the peaceful vision. Really yeah. Well.
So this is like best possible ending to this book.
So that one's not happening. So we can move on.
Yeah, to the jump scare.
I think I felt scared listening to this one. This one was good.
I mean, this was Bada Mishram, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I think it was literally her. I don't think this was a vision. I think that she's in the spiritual realm and they're accessing the spiritual realm. And when you do so, you're in danger of encountering Bada Mishram.
I was half expecting her to like punch them in the face and then they come back out of their vision or something like that. But that didn't happen.
she's breaking out of her prison, like,
and she's not very happy.
No, she seems a little upset about certain things.
A little bit, yeah.
Though from context, it seems like she was upset before being put into her prison.
Yeah, so Renarin, or no, Relaine is the one that tags her as, like, she's a horrible person. But that seems to be, like, before they put her, they locked her away. So I thought that was interesting that Relaine was the one who identified her as that.
Well, it would make sense from the cultural aspect, because she was controlling the listeners when his people broke away. She was the one in charge.
Right.
Where are you guys seeing this?
So right before she starts talking, Relaine... Well, no, maybe it's after. Relaine... I got the idea that Relaine was not keen to see Baal Mishram. And I'm not...
Relaine did not know who it was.
It says, yes, Relaine did know that name.
Way at the end.
All the way at the very end. Shallan mentions Mishram. Relaine says, oh, yes, I know that name. She ruled the Singers long ago. She wanted to perpetuate the fighting after the Fuse left.
That's the false desolation.
And it says she was the one who was determined to exterminate humankind, escalating the war.
Okay.
Interesting, yeah. So she what's interesting is they didn't connect that who they just saw was Baal Mishram.
Yeah.
She was the reason Relaine's people had abandoned their forms and left. Yeah, this is what I'm thinking of. She was the queen of the gods, they had forsaken. Yeah, okay. So Baal Mishram is the reason why the listeners left.
So we thought that Baal Mishram was angry because of her capture, but she was angry and wanted to exterminate humankind before she
before that. Right.
That's new info, yeah. I hadn't caught that. Maybe that was her motivation for starting the false desolation in the first place.
That's what it seems like.
Well, and up until now, the heralds have always described it as we betrayed Baal Mishram. And I was like, okay, well, so Baal Mishram was seemingly trying to make a peace, and then they locked up Baal Mishram, and then she got upset. That I guess it's not the case that Baal Mishram was out to destroy the humans, or at least according to Relaine. So
why would Relaine know that?
Yeah. according to the listeners, Baal Mishram was upset pre-locking. So maybe that's not reliable. I'm not sure.
It's hard to know what's reliable when we're talking about the past, as we've learned.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. Even people who are there don't recount it correctly.
So while I'm staring at it, Trevor, I know you listen to the audiobooks, but we got a picture, but it's a picture we already had, and as far as I can tell, it's identical.
Yeah, I agree.
So I wonder if there was supposed to be a different picture there.
Well, what I will tell you is, so starting with the Sunlit Man, we've gotten audio descriptions in audiobooks. It'll describe the picture to you. This picture is described in this chapter and is not in the previous one.
Oh,
so I wonder if we got it early.
We got it early
on accident. That's my gut, because this one was described this time and was not the time previous.
Okay, so the picture was moved.
Yes.
Gotcha. I was like, is this new? It looks exactly the same to me.
Yes, it does look exactly the same to me. And if you remember the last time we talked about it, I hadn't seen that one before, or I didn't even know about it because it wasn't described. But this one is described in the chapter 30 audio clip. So I bet we got that print early on accident. That'd be my guess. Anything else?
Well, okay. So I just want to talk about how we actually predicted this, that Shallan would approach Relaine and Renarin to join her in the spiritual realm, because she learned that the Corrupted Spren can help guide.
Shallan learned that?
Shallan learned that from...
Yeah.
Yeah, spying.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Doing her spying thing that she's so good at. Not sarcastic at all. I like how it was almost lampshaded of, we shouldn't have let you go in alone. She's like, I'm never alone.
that one was funny. She's like, my ego enough is enough for two people. I'm like, yeah, well, I wouldn't call it ego, but yeah. Okay. Yes, so presumably Renarin, Relaine, and Shallan are about to go have a discussion with Dalinar and Navani, assuming they can catch them before they jump in. But, yes. But back to what we were talking about kind of towards the middle of this episode. Unless Moraes and Yauntal are about to use an oath gate to get here, they're not close to come catch the coattails of the spiritual realm jump.
Right. So we know that Dalinar is doing a test run right now.
Right.
He's just going to relive an event that Hoid already knows about, and they're going to compare it to Hoid's memory. So maybe that test run happens, and then they contemplate, and then they go in. They might be going in a lot, like not just like once.
Sure.
And learning not, little bits as we read.
But also Shallan now knows about all that. So maybe they can prevent it.
Right. So I feel like, I don't know, would the story set up Moraes and Yauntal wanting to go into the spiritual realm and not have it really happen?
I assume it will happen. I don't think it will happen the way we think. I think they'll find out another way in.
Okay.
I think it will happen one way or the other.
Yeah. I mean, they have their own corrupted Spren.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems to grant access to the spiritual realm.
True.
But they specifically said they wanted to use Dalinar's perpendicularity to do it. So I guess we'll have to read and find out.
True.
How many more chapters do we get?
Four? Six? Six.
And the book's out?
Correct.
Yeah.
Wow. Not much more speculation until I just blasted the whole book.
This is definitely going to be the longest I'll have taken to read this much of a Stormlight book.
Oh yeah, I could have made it through the entire series a couple times by now.
Yeah.
Because I'm obsessive.
I keep looking at this end art piece. Who's this little plant guy in the top right with his mouth open? He looks kind of cute.
Some kind
of... Wait, that's not his mouth. That's his... Wait.
His what am eyes. I looking at?
Yeah, is his head sideways?
Which one are you talking about? The little lizardy dude or like the spiky
lizard
dude?
In the top right.
It's some kind of like, Spren.
He looks kind of cute.
Yeah. He has eyes at his mouth, which doesn't seem very practical.
Well, yeah. At first I thought it was his mouth, but then you turn your head and it kind of looks like he has a really flat head with eyes.
Well, but it looks like teeth.
It does look like teeth. Anyway. Anything else, gentlemen?
I don't think so.
Nope, not for me.
Okay. We will have an episode next week, probably. Probably not the week after that. And we might have one more before Dragonsteel, or next week might be our last one. So, thanks for joining me, David and Tim.
Thanks awesome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a lot of fun talking through this with you guys.
Yeah, okay. I'm very excited for the release.
Me as well. See you guys next week.
See you around.